later that night, I'm playing some video poker at the Wynn, and Kobe comes up, he taps me on the shoulder. And I said, "What's up?" He said, "I did what you asked me to do." And I said, "What happened?" He said, "I cried."
Wow.
Lead by Example with Bob Myers is presented for the people by Caesars Sportsbook. You bet, you get with Caesars Rewards. Must be 21 or older.
Welcome to Lead by Example. I'm your host, Bob Myers. Today, we have Coach Mike Krzyzewski. Mike, thank you for joining us.
You're welcome. And was that a leap of faith to be able to pronounce Krzyzewski?
I don't even know if I got it right. Do people even get it right? Or you just give up?
I just turned the other cheek. And
it became K, which is people can do a little easier.
They do it a lot easier, but I'm proud of my heritage and proud that I didn't change my name.
Absolutely. So I'm going to get right to it. I've read some stuff on you. You credit your mom for a lot of who you are. What about that relationship kind of impacted you the most?
Yeah, well, I grew up in inner city Chicago. It's not like gangs or anything. It was just a really good Polish neighborhood. And my mom, her parents came from Poland. My dad's parents came from Poland, Krakow. And my mom never went to high school. She was only eighth grade education. And she was a cleaning lady at the downtown athletic club on Michigan Avenue. And but she was smart. And she had an amazing work ethic. So I learned the dignity of work from her, like to get it, whatever you're doing, you get it done. And then she gave me the best advice ever the night before I went to high school. I was going to a Catholic school in the city. I was going to take buses. But I knew the city. And my mom sits me down, says, "Mike, Michael," whichever she wants something good, it's Michael. "Michael, make sure you are on the right bus tomorrow." And I said, "Ma, come on. Damon Armitage, I can even go Division Grand. I know." And she, I was a smart punk. And she says, "That's not the bus I'm talking about." And I said, "Well, what bus are you talking about?" She says, "From tomorrow on, you're going to be responsible for your bus and only let good people on it. Yeah. And if you get on anyone else's bus, make sure it's somebody who's good." It's really the best advice I've ever gotten in my life. And I've done that the entire time. And I've benefited from having a lot of good people on my bus or being on good people's buses. And she was there all the time for me.
Did she along the way, we all kind of have our missteps. Was she engaged enough even later in life to kind of call you Michael at times and say, what are you doing? You shouldn't have done that.
Yeah, well, a couple of real quick things. Yeah, I played for Coach Knight as his point guard at West Point. And, at that time, you really got on guys and you could call them names and everything.
Yeah.
It was a different time. And one night, and I was his point guard, so I'm responsible. One night, I called my mom. I said, "Ma," like, he never calls my name. And I mentioned what he was calling me. And I'm down about it. And she said, Michael, at least he's talking to you.
Yeah.
And she was right.
Yeah.
She was right. Another time, we were playing for the national championship in 1990. And Vegas completely destroys us in Denver. They beat us by 30 points. And after the game, I'm in our suite and I'm sitting in front of a fireplace. My mom comes in and she sees I'm down, and said, "Michael." I said, "Ma, what?" I says, "Don't worry about it. You'll do better next year." I said, "Ma, we played for the national championship." So fast forward, next year comes and we win the national championship. And this is true. I'm not making it up. She walks into our suite. I'm sitting in front of a fireplace again. And she yells out, "Michael, I told you you would do better." No, it's crazy.
That's crazy.
And it's, I'm not making it up.
Yeah,
you can't make up things like that.
Yeah, no, I can't. That's great. That was a good story. So Army, is that a tough decision? I mean, it's different. I don't know what options you had at a high school or how. What was the idea behind Army? It's unique.
Well, I was an all-state guard. I was the leading scorer in the Catholic League for 2 years, and I was either going to go to Creighton or Wisconsin. And Coach Knight came in, and he was just going to be the head coach. And again, from an ethnic family or whatever, West Point was recruiting you. Yeah. And my parents said, you know, that's where presidents go. Mm. And I said, no, that's where they go to war. Yeah. I said, I want to dribble. I don't want to carry a rifle.
Yeah.
And I said no to Coach Knight. And again, my parents spoke Polish when they didn't want me or my brother to understand. Mm-hmm. And for 2 weeks, they verbally beat me up and pretend this is Polish. Stupid. Mike. And for 2 weeks, no, I'm not making this up.
Yeah, yeah.
2 weeks, I finally come out and I said, all right, I'll go. And I call it the best decision I never made.
Yeah.
And now, two things that aren't alive and well as much right now in our society. One, parents will tell a kid what they think. It's not just Mike's decision.
Right.
And secondly, a youngster would trust his parents.
Yeah.
And that. And if they didn't do that and I didn't trust, none of this really, this wouldn't happen.
Yeah.
It wouldn't happen. Yeah.
So I imagine at Army playing for Coach Knight, you got held more accountable than you maybe even deserved, right? So you got the other side of the coin.
You know what? I was lucky. I went to the best leadership school in the world, the United States Military Academy. I played for one of the great coaches at point guard. So I got to learn the game and I got to learn leadership. Whether I wanted to or not at that time, I did. And I'm thankful that happened. It was I call it a double dose of love.
Yeah. And so Army, two things. I want to ask a question about Coach Knight, but first on Army, when you say that, what do you mean? What if a kid shows up at Army, what happened? How do you learn that?
Yeah, well, you learn it from one another. The Corps of Cadets is run by the Corps of Cadets. So you get it. You are put in different. If one, you are, somebody who is being led, and you know the empathy of being led, okay, and you get accustomed to different leadership styles, and then as you grow in class, sophomore, they call it yearling, juniors, cow, firstie, you get different levels of leadership, and so you're able to develop leadership and see it, see what's good. Things that you wouldn't think about. And then that helps you get ready for being a second lieutenant when you graduate. And I spent 5 years in the service too. So I resigned as a captain in the field artillery. And so I had a great 9 years of learning what it was like to be led and what it was to be a leader. And also a thing called tiered leadership. Which I believe businesses should use more. Mm-hmm. In other words, in the Army, a squad, there's about 10 people in a squad. The squad leader's got to be a good leader. There may be three or four squads in a platoon. The platoon leader is responsible. Three platoons in a company. Mm-hmm. So it's tiered leadership. And if you teach leadership at every level, there's a good chance the problems that might permeate from a certain level will not go to another level. They're taken care of at that point. And I know that that's the way to do it. But you have to learn it. You have to and you have to believe in it. You have to trust and you have to empower the people at those different tiers in your organization to be leaders and teach them how.
More Lead by Example after this. And we're back. What, I'm guessing it's some of the names you told your mom about with Coach Knight. Did you ever...
Mike was not one of them.
Yeah, I'm guessing it wasn't your actual given name. Ever a moment, I don't know you that well, but did you at a young age, I mean, I'm certain it was a different time of society where authority was respected in a way that I imagine there wasn't much coming back from you in response. Did you ever stand up to him in a way where you felt like, coach, I'm okay being coached, but you crossed the line on that? Or were you not able to do that? No,
and that's not how you were taught. The other thing, though, you know, I learned so much from Coach Knight. You know, one, the passion to play, preparation, just the game itself. You know, he had people, he was close friends with Coach Newell, who is an icon. You know, Coach Pete Newell, Henry Iba. And so he was touched by Coach Lapchick. I learned from somebody who was really smart and really knew the game and was passionate about preparation and emotion and how he presented that. He didn't present that to each player the same. I think there were certain players he felt he could get on more to get it across. But you know, what he did was nothing. It wasn't anything different than what the drill sergeants were doing. Right. It was just that time. You know, that's how you got points across.
Yeah, but then you didn't. I don't know if when you started coaching, I imagine that a lot of that is inside of you, but I don't know Coach Knight, I've met him, but I suppose you found a way to evolve beyond that with society, or you thought the best way to coach was maybe some of that and leave some of that in you. As you moved forward in your life, taking what was good of that and maybe leaving what wasn't so good or didn't line up with what you thought was the best way to do it, I suppose.
Yeah, you know, you have to learn to be adaptable and figure out who you are. And, I love the fact that playing for Coach Knight and actually working for him for a year. But here, you know, in 1984, the Olympics were in L.A., and Coach Knight led the team to a gold medal. And I did the scouting for the Olympic team. I lived in the Marriott right by LA Airport and had tape recorders and tape machines and everything. And one night I'm out and you're lucky to be around someone the status of coach because he attracts other people. And I'm at supper with Coach Knight, Coach Henry Iba, and Coach Pete Newell. And all right, not bad, right? I mean,
yeah, pretty good.
So
were you dominating the conversation?
Yeah, I just made sure I did not say a damn word. And Coach Knight left for a second, and I had known Coach Newell and Coach Iba. I got to know them, and by that time it was my fourth year at Duke, so I've been a head coach for 9 years, and five at West Point, and. They said to me, you know, you're going to be a really good coach. And one piece of advice is don't try to be us. Don't try to be, don't try to mimic any of the three of us. But if there are things you like from the three of us and things that you might not like, do it your way. Yeah. It was really a moment for me. It was, I said, okay, I'm going to start following my instincts more.
Yeah.
And it was a defining moment for me. And and that's what I try to tell the guys who work for me all the time. Look, what you like, you can't be me and you shouldn't want to be me, but you can be you. And that was a lot of people don't do that.
Yeah. We'll give you that. So you had that confidence. I mean, obviously hearing from some mentors, I can imagine being a young coach, unproven in some respects. I mean, Duke then wasn't obviously Duke.
No,
now.
We hadn't won yet. Yeah.
Yeah. And to hear that, to kind of give you that confidence must have been, like you said, you remember it 40 years later, whatever it is. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, no, it was a defining moment. And like John Shire has taken over. John's a terrific coach. He's been with me as an assistant for 9 years. And we had a good succession plan, so we were able to have a good runway going into it. And people saying, you know, you're not going to be able to fill Coach K's shoes and all that baloney. And I said, I hope you don't ever pay attention to that.
Yeah.
Fill your own shoes and hopefully they grow to be a really big size. Yeah.
Did you, early on at Duke, did you ever have a night or a time or a period of time where you said, I'm going to get fired? Or do you even think that way? Does that enter your psyche? I mean, I know it's coaching is a tough deal.
Yeah. You know, I never felt I would be fired, although after my third year, we were 38 and 47. And we have a fundraising group called the Iron Dukes.
Yeah.
And they developed a new group called the Concerned Iron Dukes. And they were, no, it's true. They were concerned about me being their coach. And they wanted me fired. I walked out of the Omni. Virginia beat us 109-65. Ralph Sampson and them. And when I walked out, I was like a leper.
Yeah.
But my AD, you know, like a cool thing is getting an opportunity, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the best thing is getting an opportunity, but from someone who believes in you.
Sure.
Not just who gives you the
opportunity. Yeah.
And Tom Butters did. And he said, you're my coach. And then we started off great the next, my fourth year. And he gave me a new contract. And, but I always felt we were going to win.
Yeah. Why did you think that?
I mean, it's the way I was taught. I mean,
it's going to make
it happen. At West Point, you know, one of the things you learn is failure is not your destination. So when you get knocked on your butt, get up. But when you get up, don't always get up alone. Get up.
Yeah.
Maybe it's a team that you need to be successful. And I've always believed that I should win. But and now saying that is one thing. Learning how to prepare to win at the level you need to win, that's something that's a learned experience. But then we started taking off.
I mean, it's interesting hearing your record after 3 years. I'm not sure in this day and age.
No, I wouldn't be there.
Yeah, which is a fantastic.
If Tom Butters was here, I would be here.
Well,
because he hired me.
Yeah,
he hired me out of Army, and I wasn't like a known. But he believed in me when we had I had three interviews, and
he
said that's my guy, and. If it would have to be Tom Butters in my AD.
I mean, these days too, that I don't know, Concerned Iron Duke, they wield a big, those type of organizations have a lot of power.
They do. Yeah. It takes somebody with, who's pretty tough to stand up to them. And, you know what though, I think people give up on people too soon.
Yeah.
And, but maybe it's because during those 3 years, I'd continue to develop a relationship with him. Mm-hmm. Like he would tell me a few things. He wasn't trying to coach or whatever. And I agree with him. We had to make one change on our staff. And, and it was because of something he saw. And, my belief is just like in your profession, the head coach has to work with you.
Right. Yeah.
You have to work with him.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know if that happens all the time.
Yeah.
You know, with ADs and
yeah.
especially if it's a new AD.
Yeah.
A lot of firings are when a guy might be at a place for a while.
Yeah.
And done well, then it's not doing well for a year or two and a new AD comes in. And they don't remember all the stuff you did well.
Yeah. Yeah.
And how you did it.
Yeah.
I went to his house a month into that and I was crying. I said, I'm going to resign. I can't do this anymore. And Butters looks at me, he said, you are not going to resign. You're my coach. I don't care if it takes 3 years.
Yeah.
So again, he believed in me.
Yeah.
You know, wow. I'm telling you, this guy, if we all look back in our lives, whether it's a parent or something, you need people like that to step up.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I didn't know that story. I do know what it's like to have a relationship with a coach from my side, but I try to do that with Kerr. And I do know how meaningful that is and how damaging it can be when it's not good.
Yeah.
When that relationship is not good, I'm not sure anybody can succeed in that environment. You don't have that connection.
Well, you know, Bob, we all need somebody to tell us the truth.
Yeah.
And the truth is not just, you know, always nice.
Yeah.
But the truth is the truth. And if you have a relationship where you deal with the truth.
Yeah.
You know, good things are going to happen. And not only that, but the relationship that you have with that person is going to be deep.
Yeah.
I mean, deep. I would assume you and Steve have an unbelievable relationship.
Well, I tell this story. We lost game 7 of the finals at home, which is probably the closest you can get to the mountain.
Right.
Without reaching it. Pretty painful. Yeah. You've been there. It's your national championship. Right. But we were up 3-1 and we didn't get it done. We walked back in the locker room. I tell this story 2 minutes after the game's over. He's with his coaches and he looks at me and I go in there and he says, I shouldn't have made a certain substitution. I should have done something different. And he looked at me and he said that. And then I said, I got to give you some better options next year. But I tell people,
right,
had he said to me something different, if he walks in that locker room and he says, you got to give me some better options next year. Or if I say, when he says, I shouldn't have made that substitution, if I said, damn right you shouldn't have, I think our relationship is over.
No, that's great. You know, you were both accountable, you know, like you didn't have to hold each other accountable.
Right.
You're already accountable, and that shows the level of relationship that you have. And no, I get it. That's a great story. It's kind of simple.
Yeah.
And it's deep.
You know what it feels like in that moment to lose and how your worst self is just sitting there ready to come out.
Right.
It's a painful thing. I mean, I know there's more painful things in life than sports, but for our occupation in these emotionally charged moments, you've seen many times, I'm sure, things go the wrong way.
Right.
Not you personally, but you've seen words that have been said or heard them said to you or to others when you say that one isn't, you're not coming back from, you're going to keep moving in life, but that relationship is damaged.
It is. Yeah.
You know, and so.
And in sport, it's very fragile, I think.
Yeah. As you look back on Duke, what was the hardest thing you had to do or get through?
Well, it was in the mid-90s. We had gone to 7 Final Fours in 9 years and won 2 national championships. And
that sounds really painful.
Well, you know what? You know from all the
success. I do know.
Yeah. How much is put on you. Right. And the expectation.
Yeah.
Like, well, you should do this again. Now there are 350 other teams.
Yeah.
No, but you did it. Yeah. You should do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I also had a back problem.
Yeah.
When in 94, our first day of practice, I had a real problem. I went to a neurosurgeon, and he tested me, and I had me hop on my right foot, and then when I hopped on my left foot, I collapsed.
Mm.
And he said, we need to have surgery tomorrow. And otherwise, you're going to have a dead foot.
Mm.
And so I did. And I was supposed to be out for a while. I came back after a day. And by the end of December, I was emotioned out. I had no feeling. I'm not saying in my foot, in my body.
Yeah.
I was burned out.
Yeah.
And it took me over 4 months. My former president, Keith Brody, was a psychiatrist, one of the best in the world, and he worked with me every day. And I got it back. And but also I changed my leadership style. I was so much more of a micromanager before. And I learned how to empower and let my people do their stuff more. Not players as much as the people around me.
I was at your last game in Cameron, and you guys lost, and I not focused on the loss. When you walked out after the game and everybody was cheering you, and you said, I think, I don't remember your exact words, but you walked out with a purpose. You were pissed.
Right.
You don't like losing. I can see that from a mile away.
Yeah.
And you said, this is not acceptable. This is not. And in that moment, so many people would have said, thank you. I've loved coaching here. You were so focused on that moment, that game. I thought that was so commendable and so unique because it was you. I mean, and that type of competitiveness is so deep within you. And I find that people think, well, everybody's competitive. No, they're not. And not everybody's competitive as you. And again, I didn't play for you. I don't know you very well. I could feel how upset you were from where I sat. And it was almost like inside I was smiling and I was like, this guy, he this would have been a moment to kind of say, well, you know, thank you, everybody. And you were still in it. And it was so authentic. And I was just kind of amazed at that part because you were still coaching. I mean, you were still in it.
Our season wasn't over.
It wasn't over.
There isn't a loss that's acceptable. Mm-hmm. And that one was really not acceptable. Right. And, you know, we're getting ready to go into tournaments and, you know, everything isn't happy. Thank you for 42 years. I appreciate it. But, I want to win a national championship. I don't want to. Yeah. And I'll say thank you when the whole damn thing is over.
Right.
More Lead by Example after this.
Building the perfect same game parlay can be time consuming, but with Quick Picks, the Caesars Sportsbook app does the work for you. Quick Picks are pre-built same game parlays that turn today's biggest headlines, storylines, and games into bets. They're quick and easy to use, and you can't miss them. They're right on the home screen of your Caesars Sportsbook app. Give them a try, and if you haven't downloaded the app yet, register using code OMAHAFULL, and then place your first bet. If you win, congrats. If you don't, you'll get your stake up to $1,250 back as a bet credit.
If you have a gambling problem, in Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. Colorado, Wyoming, Kansas, affiliated with Kansas Crossing Casino, call 1-800-522-4700. Indiana, call 1-800-9-WITH-IT. Iowa, call 1-800-BETS-OFF. Louisiana, call 1-877-770-STOP. Licensed to Horseshoe, Bossier, City, and Harris, New Orleans. Michigan, call 1-800-270-7117. Illinois, Maryland, New Jersey, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, Pennsylvania, affiliated with Harris, Philadelphia. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, crisis counseling and referral services can be accessed by calling 1-800-GAMBLER, which is 1-800-426-2537. Or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. New York, call 877-8-HOPENY or text HOPENY 467-369.
And we're back.
I know you coached this guy. I worked for a guy named Arn Tellem, and we represented Kobe Bryant. So I got to know Kobe a little bit. And I tell people, and I don't know you as well, but I sense there's this depth of competitiveness. Those people that live like that, and I put him in that category. I know that.
Yeah.
And you, I would say, sometimes those people are a little bit hard to be around because they don't think the same way. You know, they're the ones flipping the Monopoly board over after losing to a relative. You know, and you go, I love that this guy is on my team, but when I'm around him, he's a pain in the ass. How did you either corral that, or maybe you didn't, and that's okay. Maybe you go, hey, that's me, and you got to deal with it, and that's who I am. I sense that I see now in sports, and I don't want to paint it with too broad a stroke, this how much winning matters has changed. It's not, I see you smiling, but I think that's the hardest thing for me now is why can't we just make winning the most important thing? Why is it about the step back three and the highlight dunk?
it's the only thing that's important, then you know what helped me? The same thing that's helping you. You have three daughters.
Yeah.
And your wife. I live with four great women. And I learned the women's wisdom, really. In handling certain things like that. And you're right. Like with Kobe.
What's the women's wisdom? I want to hear that first. Don't skip that part.
Well, yeah, one is that, you know, when you come to a meal as they're growing up, and like we're getting ready to play Maryland, and we never say anything about the game.
Yeah, oh, I get that.
And so you're putting, I said, yo, playing Maryland. Yeah, I have my dance.
It's a big game.
I have this. It balances you, you know, and then my wife and I have been married for 53 years. We got married on graduation day and she's really smart. Mm-hmm. And, she will tell me things like, you shouldn't have done that. I should have done that.
Yeah.
No, you shouldn't have. But then I'll come back an hour later. You're right. I shouldn't have done that. Not with her.
Yeah, I understand.
So they temper you. And I love, if I had three more kids, I'd have three more daughters.
Yeah.
They're wonderful.
In this profession, the scales, it balances the scales.
Because, it does.
You know, the other day, my daughter said, where are you going? I said, we've lost five in a row. I this is not good. And she said, what, how's that? Why, Dad? I said, they don't know if we won five in a row. We lost five in a row. We won, you know. Yeah.
And by the way, you know, with Kobe, I was very close with Kobe. Mm-hmm. And he played for our Redeem team in 08 and our team in London in 12. And he was the most prepared of any player I've ever seen. And I call him an alien.
Yeah.
And, like he's just different.
Yeah.
And beautiful.
Yeah.
And absolutely beautiful. You know, he come early for that, the Redeem team thing. You know, he showed up 2 days early.
Yeah.
And wanted to, he met with me and he said, I want you to do me a favor. And I said, yeah, what is it? He said, I want to guard the best perimeter player on every team we play. And then he paused and, you know, he had those eyes that killed you right away.
Yeah, piercing.
And so he leans forward and he said, and I promise you I'll destroy him.
Yeah.
Now, if I was a general manager or put out a contract right there and have him sign it.
It's funny. I bet he saw in you, I think what he had such a hard time with was when he was around people that didn't care as much as him. And I bet he saw in you quickly, I can play for this guy because he meets me at my level as far as wanting to win. And it's hard to find people like that. I think, you know, you as a coach probably had players that maybe were even more difficult than others where you say, the care factor is the right amount with this guy. Yeah. And sometimes over the edge, you know, it tips over. But you didn't have to worry about that part with him. No way.
No. You know, extreme talent is different.
Yeah.
It's a different guy, and it's not, this extreme talent isn't exactly like another one.
Right.
And they have different personality. You know, the first night we met with our Olympic team, I told them, you're not playing for the United States. And I pointed to a picture of the gold medal we had. I said, we won't win unless you are United States basketball. We have to own it. And I asked them later that night, I said, when you go up to your suites, don't be the zillionaires you are or the studs. I want you to be 16 for 1 minute. Mm. And on their beds, we had the Olympic, their uniforms.
Mm-hmm.
And so later that night, I'm playing some video poker at the Wynn, and Kobe comes up, he taps me on the shoulder. Mm-hmm. And I said, what's up? He said, I did what you asked me to do. And I said, what happened? He said, I cried.
Wow.
And I got chills right now thinking, all right, man, this is going to be great.
Yeah.
This guy owns it. If we can get everybody to own it, and we did, we were able to get everybody to own it. But he owned it. It was easy for him to own.
Yeah. It's interesting talking to Steve now, who's going to coach. I mean, I'm sure he'll talk to you if he hasn't already and get your advice. But the thing I did say to him is like, and I don't know if you approached it this way because there's so many options as far as talent, but I told him, you got to find out who's going to lead that team.
Yeah.
You know, and with Kobe, I suppose, I don't know if it was automatic that was kind of who was going
LeBron.
He and LeBron.
We had to establish.
They're very different guys. Those two guys are really different. Really different.
The relationship that they formed was the foundation for the whole U.S. culture.
Yeah.
And Steve will have to do something like that. You know, Steve was part of a staff. You know, Greg Popovich did an amazing job.
Because
he didn't have time.
Yeah.
It depends how much time Steve will have.
Yeah.
And work on culture and getting to know the guys. Pop, they didn't have that.
Yeah.
They didn't have that. And they did an unbelievable job to win.
Yeah. 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 It's a hard, people think that's an easy thing. But when you're, like you said at Duke, when you're winning, when your only acceptable outcome is a championship or a gold medal, that's pressure.
Yeah.
That's pressure.
Look at your league. The international players, some of them are the best players in the league.
I know. Yeah. Luckily, they're not on the same team, which is good. But you're right.
In the early 90s, before Yugoslavia got split and before the Soviet Union got split, those two teams could have been NBA playoff teams.
Yes. Really good teams. you said, I think you said in one of your interviews, the single most important part of bringing a team together is the formation of relationships.
Yeah.
How did you go about, you at the end with Duke, you're getting kids for like 8 months sometimes. I don't know how you can impact. I mean, we have kids. I told somebody, we have a guy, Andre Iguodala. I said, how's Andre? I said, it takes years to get to know Andre.
Yeah.
And that must be that way with you. And I think early on you get kids for 4 years. But by the end, you know, maybe it's 9-10 months. How do you do that?
See, you don't recruit a player.
Yeah. No, you know, we pay
him. Yeah. Yeah. So in recruiting, like I'm recruiting you and you're one of these top players, you commit to me a year in advance, 9 months.
Right.
I didn't have to do this with Battier, Dunleavy, and those guys. Mm-hmm. They were going to be with us. I start developing a relationship before they ever get here.
Sure.
And that individual relationship. And then to do some team bonding things in the summer when we bring them, where they can get to know one another. If you get a class together with four or five guys and can get them to do their group chats and all that, so you want them much better prepared before they ever get here.
Sure.
But it's true. Like to give you an example of how the world changes. So for a Dunleavy, I'll say Shane Battier.
Sure.
Okay. You recruit him for 2 years at least.
Mm-hmm.
And he comes and you get a 4-year return.
Yeah.
Somebody at the level of Battier will only stay 9 months.
Yeah.
You still have to recruit him for 2 years.
Yeah.
So you have 8 years of recruiting to get 4 years return instead of two. That's a big.
It's hard.
It's hard.
It's
really hard. And I, you know, people don't think of me of having a good sense of humor probably, but I got a great sense of humor. Right. And especially with my guys and my team and I try to get a lot done through humor.
Yeah.
I don't have big formal meetings with my guys. They're more impromptu.
Yeah.
And a big thing for me, Bob, was overcoming the age difference. I'm 75.
Yeah. Right.
Last year, I had two kids on my team who started, were 18.
Yeah.
You know,
a little bit of a gap.
There's a pretty big gap. So you have to constantly change how you talked, how you communicated, depending on the culture. But you never change the values that you were trying to teach.
Right.
And to me, earlier in our conversation, you had mentioned about adapting. That's the single biggest area where I've had to adapt. But it keeps you young, too.
It
keeps you young.
How did you, I find, we get some 18-year-olds, too. Well, you know, I'm 19, so a little bit older than you. I think the power of the media and the social media is
huge.
Is huge. And you saw that at Duke with the people you coached and the pressure and what their ranking was and what they were supposed to be. How did you kind of get them to the best of your ability to forego that or put that in its proper place? Because for you and I, and you're a little bit further along, we can say, doesn't matter what people say, who cares? Right. That's not these kids' life. I mean, they've grown up with so much adult oversight and so much scrutiny and so much praise that it's a little bit unnatural for them, for someone to say, don't worry about Twitter or social media. That's been their entire upbringing, and easier for us to make that distinction, but not them. So how did you coach a player that maybe was everything that he was supposed to be and more importantly, not?
Yeah, well, this is, I think, one of the most important things you could talk about right now in coaching is the external pressures or demands that are placed on this generation, not even 5 years ago. We use the expression one voice, like we win, you're going to look at all those things and people are going to say you're terrific.
Yeah.
And you won't even know who they are.
Yeah.
When we lose, they're going to say how crappy you are.
Yeah.
Whatever. I said, you need to listen to me.
Yeah.
Our relationship. But I don't know, that doesn't always work. You know.
Yeah, right.
You have to bring it to attention. You know, the thing that you guys have going for you, which we lost when guys left, like with Steph, Draymond, Clay, You have a core group of culture guys.
Yeah.
I mean, that can help. I wonder how they would feel about talking to the new guys that it'd be interesting. I'd love to talk to them. I had the opportunity to coach all of them, and they're good, great guys.
Yeah.
Like, can you influence the young guy that comes in? Like, one of your guys, Kuminga, we couldn't recruit him for a number of reasons, but I love him. I think he has great character.
It's interesting you say that because I think that's pretty intuitive because I would agree with that. But you have to know people a little bit to make that determination. And a lot of people wouldn't say that. And I think they'd be wrong. I think you're right. I do. Not just because he plays for us, but I think you hit on that. Iguodala, we talked about him, has become kind of a mentor. So
that's
so
when great.
When Iguodala, early on, you know, he'd walk by me and go, I don't know what you want to do with this guy. He's got no effing clue. Like, you know, but then about 3 weeks ago, I said, how's our guy doing? He said, you know what? He's getting it. He's starting to get it. Yeah. So we're lucky. Iguodala is twice his age, coach. He's twice his age.
He is. That's amazing. But when I saw Kuminga, he played for my nephew in his AAU program. And I loved him. And I felt of all the kids in high school, he had the greatest will to win.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I didn't get to know him as well, character wise, but I saw it.
Yeah.
For me, we try to recruit. That's one of the things we look for. We don't recruit just talent. We recruit character. Yeah. So we recruit talent with character, not talented characters.
The NBA has some. We have some.
They
talent.
Do. Yeah,
we,
they do.
You know what? We the other night on Kuminga. Then I have a last question for you, but on Kuminga, he said publicly, Kerr praised him, and he said publicly, "I a relationship with your coach is important. I've never had a relationship with a coach, which is for you to hear. You know, you probably had that in high school, for you had that in college, you had that, but to hear a kid that's already in the NBA second year to say, I've never had a relationship with a coach, is that tells you a lot about, you know, what's going on before they show up, you know, and now if they go to Duke, they're going to have a relationship with you.
The other thing, Bob, I would mention about him, because he's not from the U.S.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What level of relationship has he had with an adult?
Yeah, I know.
To help him along in his career. Yeah. And he's still at the level he's at, which is great.
Yeah.
Imagine,
I know,
the upside
yeah.
for this kid.
Yeah.
Because he's still a kid.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of his.
How are you? Last one. This is it. This is the last question. It's been a few months, more than a few months. And you now are in a different phase. You're not a head coach. Mm-hmm. And I imagine you had an idea of what you thought it was going to be like. And now you somewhat know what it's like. How does it feel?
It feels great. It actually is a lot better. I'm really happy. I'm busy. I do a lot of speaking over around the country for the Washington mm-hmm. Speakers Bureau. Have our own radio show. I have 10 grandkids
who
live all close to me. In the last 2 days, we have streamed games. My grandson, who graduated from Duke, played for me, is now at NYU playing. Yeah. We streamed his game. We watched his game 2 nights ago. And then Quinn and Rem, my middle daughter's two oldest sons, their high school and middle school games we stream. I'm happy as can be. And I still have my office at Duke. I have a lifetime contract at Duke. So
great.
I'm doing a lot of the things I did before, except I don't have to coach or recruit. And I'm not good. I'm like great about it. And I'm really happy. And I'm very supportive. John Shire and I speak frequently. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I'll come to a practice every once in a while for a while. And he knows I'm there for him, but he's got it, you know, it's his.
Yeah.
And we want to support him, and me being around, that doesn't help as much, I don't think. Me being around publicly,
yes,
privately, I'll be there all the time.
Yeah. And he seems, I don't know him, and I don't, he seems like a really good person. You know,
he is.
And I'm sure will be a great coach. And I'm sure is a great coach. But I kind of look more towards, you hire a guy like John, you hope he becomes the next 30-year guy. And I think he has those qualities him as a person, which is great.
You know what? He's a natural.
Yeah.
He was a natural when I recruited him. The game, he sees the game well. And he's a great people person. And, now they have to win a certain amount and keep going.
You couldn't resist. You just had to throw that in.
No, he knows it too.
I know. We all know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I said, let's do that. You know,
yeah, that's right.
With those Iron Duke people might be coming after you.
Concerned Iron Duke.
The concerned. I still don't do much with the Iron Dukes. I don't know. I try not to hold a grudge, but
I can't tell. Can't tell. Bothers you. Oh man. Well, thank you, Coach. That was fantastic. And anytime you need anything from the Golden State Warriors, just ask. So appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah. No, it's an honor to be on. Thank you, buddy.
Take care.